Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's our Pets and Vets program this afternoon, and here to take your calls, Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. Dr. Scharf is a 1985 graduate of the Veterinary College at Cornell, extensive experience in veterinary medicine of all stripes. Dr. Scharf, welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you so much, Ray. It's a pleasure to be here. Hi, everybody.
The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Again, 1-800-348-2551. You can also tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop, one word, WAMCVOXPOP. Now, on some programs, it's very simple. When you have a simple question, it's not always easy to get a kind of a question that requires a lot of background in 140 characters. Give it a shot if you will. Try to be as specific as you can. You can always check in and be more verbose at our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Please provide us as much as you can on your pet, including their age and sex, if you're submitting a question online. Well, with the preamble all finished, welcome back to the show, Ron. And, you know, I got thinking, with all the displacement and evacuation of people downstate and in Jersey and in other states, I got thinking about what happens to the pets in a major catastrophe like this. Now, thankfully, we were spared in the greater Albany area to a large extent, but we had Irene blow through. We had Lee, of course, down in spots like when Katrina hit in New Orleans. There must have been millions of pets that were also affected that we really don't hear about.
Yes. Well, I did hear a lot about the pets in New Orleans during Katrina, because we have to be concerned, Ray, that it's not only the safety of the animals that are involved, but it's the safety of their owners. Because I heard that a lot of the New Orleans people that were advised to evacuate did not, because they could not bring themselves to abandon their animals. And I saw a lot of pictures of people on their roofs with their dogs or their cats or whatever. And I think that the disaster response community learned from Katrina that the disaster planning needs to take into account that a lot of people will not abandon their pets when they are told to evacuate a place. So that does present difficulties, and I don't know how many of our emergency response vehicles are accommodated to be enabled to take animals with them. It complicates an already complicated and harrowing situation. So I agree with you, Ray. I think that as far as New York City yesterday and the day before, even if the mass transit was working, I don't know how many of these pets could go on to the mass transit in order to get to a shelter, were there to be a shelter that could accommodate them. And now that a lot of the mass transit's knocked out, especially the subways, that's not even an option. So the people are, I would imagine, a lot of them are kind of confined. A lot of the New York City people don't have cars. And if the mass transit's down, they don't even have an opportunity to take them somewhere. So it definitely is a concern.
And, of course, where to take them is a question. We get a slew of press releases all the time, hourly. Every 10 minutes we'll get a press release in the newsroom. And I recall seeing one in the slew of info that came in before this storm hit. And it was from the AKC. That's the American Kennel Club, right?
Right.
And it had a list or a link to a list of shelters that took pets. And I guess that only is helpful if you can get there in time and you heed the warning and get out when you're supposed to get out.
Exactly. But also, I took a look at a link that I was looking at yesterday from, I think it was, listings of shelters from the Red Cross, if I'm not mistaken. They provided a Google map of the Capital Region, and I sent it on Schenectady, saw nothing there. And the closest I saw was a church that's just under Colony Center on Central Avenue. So it didn't look like there were that many shelters for people, let alone for dogs. So I think that that's definitely a chink in the armor about preparing for disasters.
All right, let's go to the phones. It's 800-348-2551. Ron Scharf is our guest. It's our monthly Pets and Vets program. Dan in Poughkeepsie, you're first. Hi, Dan.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Thanks
for taking my call. I've got about a 45-pound spaniel mix I got from the SPCA here in Hyde Park. And we gave him the drops for the fleas and ticks. And he was really freaking out yesterday. He was rolling around on his back, and he lays on his back sometimes, but he was really on his back quite a bit yesterday and then rubbing his face in it. And he just couldn't seem to sleep at all last night. It kept the both of us up. So I was just wondering if there are any alternatives other than the drops to help to prevent fleas and ticks for a more long-haired, middle-sized dog like that.
Is that a common problem?
It's not unheard of for animals to have a bad reaction to the feel of the stuff on them, but it is unusual to not be able to sleep all night, like Dan's saying about his spaniel mix. I have seen a few cases, and I'm just talking three or some low number like that, where they get some irritation at the site of where you apply the stuff. So the skin might look a little red or inflamed. And surely if that happens every time, then that's a candidate for using a different product. As far as someone that's had something that's lasted more than a day, that's been very rare in my experience. I don't know,
Dan. Well, this was on the same day of application.
Right. I don't know which one you use. There are several out there. There are some that are over the counter that you can get in stores. There are some that you can only get at vets. I personally prefer the ones that you can only get at vets because I can vouch for their efficacy, that they're being used in with the right directions. The ones that you get in the stores over the counter, there's not as good a directions given. I don't know how good the product is. I do know, especially with cats, that a lot of the insecticides that are labeled for cats over the counter produce toxic reactions, that a lot of cats are easily poisoned by some of these flea and tick sprays. So as far as an alternative, Dan, to what you used, that topical, it is possible if it had, for instance, an alcohol vehicle, that the dog was responding to the, you know, if you ever put some rubbing alcohol on yourself, it's got a bit of a bite to it, though it eventually evaporates in a few minutes. So it could be the vehicle of the stuff that was causing the reaction, Dan. But there is an oral form of a flea product that is great. And if it's only in for the purpose of flea control, it's called Comfortis. And if it's the same stuff combined with a heartworm preventive, that's called Trifexis. And those products I'm using personally a lot because it kills all adult fleas within 4 hours. It's amazingly effective. And I've seen very little bad reactions to it, though I have seen a few. And then as far as the ticks, Dan, because the Comfortis or the Trifexis would not address that, the ticks, you can get a collar called Scalibor, S-C-A-L-I-B-O-R, that is very effective tick preventive. It lasts 6 months. I use it for my own dog, along with the Trifexis, and that would be the best thing, assuming that your dog would have a bad reaction to any topical. But you haven't used another topical, so that might be another course for you to consider.
Okay. Dan, thank you very much. We appreciate it. Let's go to Jenny in Schenectady. Jenny, you're next.
Hi, I have a 13-year-old female cat, and I have other cats in the house as well, but the issue I'm having with her is that she will only she won't defecate in the litter box. She will only do that on the basement floor. She urinates in the litter box, but she won't defecate in there.
And how long,
go ahead.
How long has it been going on, Jenny?
On and off for 6 or 8 months, but in the last, I'd say 6 weeks, it's every time she goes to the bathroom, that's where she goes. And it's not in one spot. It's all over in different spots, but only in the basement.
Jenny, does she get along with the other cats?
Yeah, I mean, she kind of keeps to herself. I've tried everything. I have 3 very large litter boxes in the basement. We clean every day, and then once a week we completely clean them with soap and water and everything. And I don't know.
Well, what you need to do, Jenny, in these kinds of things, and these elimination disorders are one of the most common behavioral problems in a cat, though it's more common for it to be urinating outside the box than defecating outside the box. You still want to rule out possible physical causes. For instance, if there's an animal that's drinking too much because they have some condition, so whether it's an endocrine condition like diabetes or kidney failure or whatever, there are several things that will cause cats to drink more. When they drink more, they urinate more. When they urinate more, the litter boxes get wet faster. And that cat that's doing it or the other cats that it's living with are fastidious, and they may decide that box is too wet for me to go in there, and I'm going to go somewhere else. Now, I don't know what the case would be in your situation, Jenny, because I don't know enough about it. I surely am puzzled that why is the cat defecating outside the box, but not that's not the case for the urination. Sometimes cats with a bladder problems or urinary tract problems, it hurts them to urinate, and they might associate the box with pain, and maybe they think if they go elsewhere, it won't hurt them as much. I don't know if that's the case with defecation. You're not talking any diarrhea or anything like that, Jenny?
No, just regular defecation. My vet had, vet tech had told me that maybe it had something to do with substrate preference and try putting an empty box down there because maybe for some reason she's not liking the feel of the litter when she
goes. That's very good of that vet tech to have mentioned that because whatever caused them to go outside the box in the first place, they may decide that they prefer the other place that they're going, the surface of it, more than the litter surface. And that's what you call a substrate preference. And even if the original problem is taken care of, they keep on going because of the substrate preference. Basically, Jenny, what you need to do, if it hasn't been already done, is have the 13-year-old have a full, complete physical exam, blood work to make sure that there's nothing physical going on, check the stool for parasites, and then if you've ruled out all physical possibilities, what you need to do is get one more box, one more litter box than the number of cats that you have. Do the sifting like you said you do daily. Okay, find all the places where the cat's done it already, and you need to clean them and clean them thoroughly and enzymatically neutralize it. Otherwise, that cat will keep on getting the cue to go elsewhere. Okay, then use this Feel Away. It's a synthetic pheromone that I've mentioned many times before on the show. It's spelled F-E-L-I-W-A-Y. That would hopefully address any kind of stresses that the cat might feel from the other cats, and then see what kind of results you get from that and take it from there.
All right. Jenny, we got a break here, but good luck.
Jenny.
Thank you very much. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. It's Pets and Vets. Dr. Ron Scharf will be here all hour. Get your calls in at 800-348-2551. More on the way.
Support for WAMC comes from the Albany Academy and Albany Academy for Girls, single-gender education for boys and girls for nearly 200 years. Hosting an open house this Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m., albanyacademies.org. Adventure Outfitters Hadley, Massachusetts, offering outdoor clothing, camping equipment, cross-country skis, snowshoes, climbing equipment, canoes and kayaks, open evenings until 9, adventureoutfitter.com. Reform Pilates Studio, Saratoga Springs, teaching Romanus Pilates, providing a fully equipped studio with Grotz apparatus, private, semi-private, and small group classes, reformyourbody.com. And Isn't It Sweet, Albany, New York, handmade chocolates and candies for the holidays, offering gift baskets, corporate and personalized gifts, and chocolate-dipped fruits, 518-489-9820.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551, the number. You can also tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop. That's one word, WAMC VOXPOP, or hit our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Dr. Ron Scharf with us, as he is once a month, to answer your pets and, well, mainly cats and dogs, I would say, right, Ron?
Right.
Okay. No badgers or anything like that?
Haven't seen any badgers.
No. All right. Well, then let's just get right back to the dogs and cats. It's Harriet in Woodstock. Harriet.
Hello. Before I ask my question, I'd like to mention something. It's called the Pets Evacuation and Transportation Standards Act. I believe it's federal law. It was passed after Hurricane Katrina. PETS is called the P, and that stands for PETS, PETS Act.
Okay.
Passed in 2006, requires local and state governments to include household pets in their evacuation plans.
Very interesting.
Very interesting, Harry.
And,
thanks.
Yes, and also Mayor Bloomberg has said that taxi cabs are required to take animals in an evacuation situation, an emergency situation. And you might, through Best Friends, this is the magazine I get. You must have heard of Best Friends in Utah. If you go to their website, which would be bestfriends.org, that probably would lead you to more information about this.
Very, very nice. And thank you for that information, Harriet. What's your question?
It's great information, but about the taxi, Harriet, I'm intrigued by that because I find as a human I have a hard enough time getting a taxi in Manhattan, let alone with an animal.
Yeah.
But
good point.
Well, sounds good. Good intentions of Mayor Bloomberg, though.
Good intentions. Will they be, you know, honored?
Exactly.
Well, hopefully they will. But it's getting to be more and more. You know, animals are being considered much more, and that's very good.
Sure. Mm. Sure.
So my question is regarding a very elderly terrier. He's not a Westie, but he looks like one, but his ears flop over. And he's probably about 19 years old.
Wow.
And he's in the past couple of weeks, he has very, very rapidly lost vision and hearing, even though both were going slowly. He has infection in one eye, and that's being treated, but the eye has lost all vision. And what's happening is he's becoming very confused, and when I call him, he goes in the opposite direction if he hears me, and he just crashes into things, doesn't seem to remember where anything is in the house. I'm very careful not to move anything, but he still doesn't have... he hasn't remembered where anything is.
Hmm.
And he's exhibiting something which somebody said to me was called sundown syndrome, where he'll get, for no reason, in the evening sort of, he'll get extremely sort of agitated, and he'll begin this, like, he'll start walking all over the house. If I let him out, he's got a fenced area. He'll walk all over, just walk and walk and walk and nose into things, and he's getting stuck in corners. And anyway, it's just, he's also peeing in the house sort of randomly, and he's just I'm just wondering, I mean, I know he's very old, I'm just wondering if there's anything that could ease any of these symptoms. He does sleep most of the time.
Okay.
So the answer is yes, at least something to address what I would assume is some dementia,
yes.
Harriet. And there is a medication that would address that. It's called seledriline.
Seledriline?
S-E-L-E-G-E-L-I-N-E.
I'm sorry, S-E-L-E.
Yes, G-E-L-I-N-E.
Got it, okay.
And it'll take a month before you see any response. So you need to be patient. But
okay.
If there's some kind of dementia going on, there is a good possibility that the seledriline would help.
Uh-huh.
Okay. As far as this the sundown syndrome that you mentioned.
Is that something you know?
No, I'm not aware of that. But
okay.
What it makes me wonder, if the vision is starting to go, Harriet, then low light circumstances produce the worst vision. So
yeah.
The first place that you'll see a lot of these animals that are losing their vision, the first time you'll see it is in the dusk or the twilight times of the day. So what I would do is I would be curious if you put all the lights on in your house during that time, during that twilight time, see if that makes a difference. But if your 19-year-old dog is losing his vision, otherwise there's not much else that could be done other than treating the infected eye that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Losing the hearing, it's similar, assuming that he doesn't have ear infections. Those senses just deteriorate with age, and that's a pretty advanced age, 19. And I think that it's part and parcel of growing old otherwise.
Hmm.
Yeah, well, it's sad to see it happen, but he's scared. He's scared. I think he's a little frightened about his loss but his nose is great.
Well, is he scared in the daytime, in the daylight hours as
yes,
well?
Yes, yes. He has had that agitation during the day, you know, in the morning as well. So.
Well, sometimes that agitation is part of things changing inside the mind. And
yeah.
What I think happens is that something, circumstances that you were used to having happen all your life, a certain way of perceiving the world and relating to the world, is now changing because you're not getting the same sensory input and your brain may not be processing it in the same way. And that produces an uncertainty and an insecurity in people that I think, and I'm just speculating at this time, contributes to an animal's agitation, Harriet. I just think that it's tough to deal with those kinds of changes.
Harriet, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate
it. Harriet. Good luck.
So, doctor, is 19 a really excessive age for a dog? I mean, what's an average?
It's exceedingly old for a dog, though it's not unheard of. It's like a person getting to 95 or something like that. It's not unheard of in any way, but it's not something that you'd expect them to be able to get
to. Let me ask you a philosophical question. Feel free not to answer. You have a 19-year-old dog, rapidly losing all hearing and sight, suffering from some issues, dementia or otherwise. When is it the humane thing to say, well, it's time to go?
So that's an excellent question and one that's ultimately unanswerable because every case rate is different, okay? Mm. But I'll tell you the guidelines that I use. If that animal enjoys being alive, if that animal engages with its world, if, say, that animal enjoys getting attention from its owner, if that animal is eating, then those are the most important things that I consider essential to answer that question. Now, if those things are happening and there's a lot of pain, there's a lot of arthritis or whatever, then it gets more difficult to make the decision. But I suggest to people to look at whether or not they think that animals' quality time, that quality of lifetime, is more than the non-quality time. If there's way more of their life that is spent in pain and misery and agony, I agree with you. And I'll often mention that as a possibility to people because people often come in, Ray, and they feel too guilty to even think about euthanasia. They feel too guilty. They say things like, who am I to play God and make that decision? And oftentimes, when I mention that as an option to consider, amongst all the other options, of course, they'll a lot of times feel relieved that someone else mentioned it, that the vet mentioned it, and now I don't have to feel as guilty about considering euthanasia for my beloved animal, etc. Yeah. And it does change the equation a lot of the time. So I think that it's ultimately a very personal decision, of course, Ray. And the most that I could do as a vet is outline options and outline what I consider what the prognosis is, how much likely it is there that this animal will get better. And if their quality time is being outweighed by their non-quality time and they don't have a great likelihood of getting better, that's when I consider that option and mention it to people.
Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. It's our monthly Pets and Vet Show at 1-800-348-2551. Back to the phones we go. Mike in Saratoga. Mike, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi, Mike.
I have another call for the geriatric pet hour.
Okay.
I have a 13-and-a-half-year-old mixed breed, terrier collie. Anyway, she is having a leaky bladder, and she's currently on Proin 50 milligrams.
Okay.
That's the name brand, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yes.
I'm just wondering, she's been on it probably a year, and it's getting worse, and like last night my wife stepped in a puddle, and the dog knows that she's doing it. She's a very intelligent animal, and she's always licking down there, and she stays as much outside as possible because she doesn't want to come in the house. But I'm just wondering if he can inform me with some stuff, if I can go to our own veterinarian. I want to know, you know, I've been told things that it could be when we adopt her from the shelter that they didn't do a great job when they fixed her and things start falling apart. And then, of course, it could also be cancer of the bladder and other things. So I'm wondering what you could tell me about it.
Okay. Well, Mike, have physical problems been ruled out? Has an exam and blood work and a urinalysis been done?
We had a urinalysis done, but, and I think that was ruled out, and she's very active and for a 13-and-a-half-year-old.
Okay.
In good health.
So the urinalysis could rule out that there's an infection going on, Mike, but it may it may not rule out that there might be something physical going on, Mike, that might be making the dog drink more and what goes in must come out. Now, if that dog has kidney failure or diabetes or Cushing's or one of these other endocrine problems or metabolic problems that make her drink more, then that's got to be addressed before anything else. Now, if you eliminate those physical possibilities, then you're looking at the Proin first, and there is an alternative to the Proin. But before I mention it, I wanted to ask you, did the Proin help at first?
It seemed to, and now it doesn't seem to. I mean,
okay.
And we increased the dose, too. I think it was originally like half a pill, and now
okay.
it's a whole pill twice a day or something.
Okay, and I just also wanted to ask you, is the dog leaking when she's asleep or when she's awake?
Now that also has changed. It used to be mainly asleep, but now she'll come in my room and like I'm working, and then I'll notice sometimes there might be a little blotch there in the day.
Okay, so that's just to me, Mike, that there are two things going on. The incontinence that would respond to the Proin, or the second thing, which I haven't mentioned yet, and something else which is making her drink too much water. I have that feeling that she's drinking more than she ought to be. Now, the alternative to the Proin is an estrogen-like medication, which we used to use many years ago exclusively until the Proin-type products came along, and we stopped using the estrogens for the most part because they have potential side effects. They could suppress the bone marrow. Now, at the once-a-week dose that I used to use this stuff, I very, very rarely saw it cause that problem. But since the Proin was around, I definitely reached for that first. But I am mentioning to people that if it truly is one of these incontinences that's not due to the dog drinking too much, that's not due to a bladder infection, then an estrogen product would be the way to go. And I saw recently that one of the drug companies for animals just came out with that kind of thing labeled for use in dogs. So we no longer have to go off label and go to a compounding pharmacy because DES has not been available for a bunch of years. But,
okay.
Mike, you need to do blood work on that dog. You need to find out what that dog's sugar, blood sugar level is, what the electrolytes are, how the kidneys are doing, because I'd surely want to rule out something that's making her drink too much, that's making her leak when she's conscious of it, because the incontinence problem, they're always asleep for it.
Okay. Mike,
okay,
thanks a
thank
lot.
You.
We appreciate
Good
it.
Luck,
okay,
Mike.
A couple questions here before the break. This one from Facebook. Sally says, there are several disaster relief organizations, including Western Massachusetts Disaster Animal Response and others that need volunteers. Also, everyone should have a disaster preparedness kit for each pet, which is great advice. This would include food, bedding, medications, vet contact information, etc. Well, not a question, but certainly a good bit of advice there from Sally. Also, Renee of Love Us and Leave Us Pet Sitting on Facebook asks, Lyme vaccines, yay or nay? I own a dog daycare. It seems dogs get this vaccine, yet still get Lyme. What is the point, and is it necessary? What do you think, Doc?
Well, that's a big topic for me, Renee, because I'm one of the few veterinarians in the area that do not advocate Lyme vaccination, because one of the reasons for what you say, that there are vaccinated dogs that do end up getting Lyme. And also, for the animals that get exposed to Lyme, 95% of them do not show symptoms. They don't exhibit symptoms. So in the 5% that do develop symptoms, most of them will respond to medication. So under those circumstances, I decided when the Lyme vaccine came out a bunch of years ago, when I'm on the fence about something, Ray, and medically,
yeah,
I do less. That's my personal approach. And I was on the fence about the Lyme vaccine at that time because I not only did not know the efficacy, but I didn't know if there was going to be bad side effects. Now that it's been a bunch of years since then, I have not seen a bunch of side effects, but I've not been adequately convinced that it's worth it recommending to all my patients to have their dogs on the Lyme vaccine. But I offer it for the people that want to. I go over the pros and cons. If someone's dog is going into a big tick type area,
yeah,
that's high grass, that's bushes, brush, the woods, the bike path along the Mohawk, whatever, then I don't think that there's a lot of downside to doing the Lyme vaccine. I just haven't been convinced that it's worthwhile going for. I haven't done it for my own dog.
Now, what are some of the possible side effects?
So any vaccine is a foreign protein that you're injecting into the system,
mm-hmm,
okay? And so there could be a vaccine reaction against any vaccine. And so the decision whether or not something is worth it, you have to weigh the pros and the cons.
Mm-hmm.
And there's almost always cons. There's almost always the possibility of side effects. Now, when that vaccine first came out a dozen years ago or however long it was, the suspicion was that it might cause what they call immune complex deposition in the kidneys. That's where the antigen and the antibody clump together and they gunk up the basement membrane in the kidneys and they interfere with the kidney function. The kidney spills protein, etc.
Yeah.
And I have not seen a whole lot of that happen, though I don't know for a fact that it's been disproven either.
Okay.
So what are the side effects? It's just a philosophical thing, Ray, just like you were mentioning before. There's always these philosophical issues that you have to make a decision about that, and I do repeat that I'm in the minority of the veterinarians around here, that I just don't have a whole lot of confidence in the vaccine. So, Renee, on Facebook, I would agree with, but that if some dog had a very high risk of getting Lyme, then, yeah, by all means, okay, go with the vaccine.
Well, thanks, Renee, for checking in on Facebook. You can do the same at WAMC Radio on Facebook, WAMC Radio. You can also tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop. Mr. Zach, let's take a break, and we'll be back with the home stretch and Ron Scharf coming up on Vox Pop.
Support for WAMC comes from Smith College Museum of Art, presenting Drawn to Excellence, Renaissance to Romantic Drawings from a Private Collection, works from the 16th to early 19th century, smith.edu/artmuseum. A.D. George Construction, for over 25 years, serving the Pioneer Valley's residential construction needs, remodeling, additions, and more, from design to completion, 413-256-6752. The Unitarian Universalist Congregations of the Capital Region, welcoming families who value religious diversity, capitalregionuu.org. And Zen Mountain Monastery, outside of Woodstock, New York, a Buddhist training center offering Sunday programs, weekend retreats, and monthly residences to awaken body, mind, and spirit, mro.org/ZMM.
one 800 348 2551 is our telephone number. It is Vox Pop. Ron Scharf is here. Pets and vets. We go to Joanne in Manlius. Joanne, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 17-year-old Doberman mix, a little bit of mix. anyways, the dog was inherited from my daughter, and the dog has been from puppyhood. Has been hers. And at first we thought it was just because she was changing environments. My daughter had a baby and didn't want the dog to be around the baby. And the dog had spent a lot of time at our house anyways over the first few years because she had broken her rear leg as a puppy and it was repaired wrong. We had to take her for several surgeries to an orthopedic surgeon. And she seemed to heal okay, ran like the wind outside and has continued to do that. However, over the past 3 or 4 years, she's been having difficulty getting up from sitting down, and we have to kind of lift her rear end up in order to get her up sometimes. She slips a lot, so we've had to resort to putting runners everywhere in the house so she doesn't fall. Because she's heavy. She weighs 70 pounds, and it's hard to get her up sometimes. And at first, when we got her rear end up, her front leg was way out, like Bambi on the ice. But when she's outside, once she's up and she's got traction and everything, she runs all over the place. She chases deer, she chases the cat, and doesn't seem to be in any difficulty. We've hit her on Deramax, Cosequin, Tramadol, and we've just recently had to change her from the Deramax, because it's not available anymore, to something that starts with an R. And lately, she's falling backwards. She's falling more now than she was once we added the Deramax, and now we've had to take the Deramax away. Ramipril, I think, is the name of
Rimadyl.
The drug.
Rimadyl.
That's it, yeah. And she's on Tramadol, Cosequin, and something else over the counter that she's been on for years, the past 3 or 4 since this started to happen. And now that she seems to be falling more in the house, slipping a little bit more, less stable on her feet, and she can't get up now again. And it's been like a year that she's been doing really well when we had her on this regime. The only other complication right now is that periodically, whenever we let her stay in the house too long at first, she pooped on the carpet.
Oh boy.
In the living room. And so the doctor tried different diets and has her on a DCO, I think. It's something like this, three initials, from Purina, but you can only get it at the vet. And so we thought that the increased fiber, got like 15 grams of fiber or something in the teens. I'm pretty sure, because the highest we could get was something else that had 8 grams. Anyways, that increased fiber diet that you can get very expensively at the vet seemed to work, but it was hard to tell because it was always months in between when it would happen. But now lately it happens even when she's not, you know, left alone,
okay.
Even when the people are in the house. So the pooping, and we have a new carpet now, and she's christened both of the new carpets. And they've been those episodes are a little closer together, but she seems to be, according to the vet, really, really healthy for her age of 17. But the orthopedic problem is getting worse, and we don't know if maybe there's another product out there that we can try now that we can't use Duramax. That seems to be, you know, what has happened.
All right, Joanne.
Before you start, Dr. Joanne, that was the longest question ever posed on Vox Pop. You now win a prize. All right, go ahead, Doctor.
Joanne, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, of which Duramax is one, the one that's off the market now, the Rimadyl is another. Just like in people, Joanne, some will have better success with some animals than others. So if the Rimadyl is not helping as much, then you could try another one. I would suggest one called Medicam that I've been using since the Duramax has been hard to get. It also comes in a generic form, so if the Medicam does the job, it could be gotten as Meloxicam, which is the chemical name. But a word of caution that I tell people is whenever you switch from one NSAID, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, to another, it is recommended to have a 5-day washout period, 5 days during which they're getting neither. Otherwise, they might be at an increased risk of getting an ulcer. Okay, in a dog, you could use a temporary, you know, Tylenol during that 5-day period of time if you need to, if they have to have something. The tramadol that you mentioned is also helpful as long as you get the right dose so that they're not getting so much that they're zonked. But you got to bear in mind, Joanne, at 17 years old, that's exceedingly geriatric. Okay, so
15-year-old, right?
Well, it says 15 on there, but she said 17
okay.
twice. Even if it's 15, that's pretty old for a Dobie as well. 70-pound dog at 15 years of age, there's not that many around.
Yeah.
And the drugs are not going to get the dog back to when they were pre-fracture puppies, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But the other two products that I would recommend, Joanne, one is called Adequin. And that is a series of injections that are given twice a week for 4 weeks. And then periodically afterwards, depending upon the animal. But a lot of dogs with arthritis get a lot of benefit from the Adequin. And then the other thing I would recommend is acupuncture. Because acupuncture is non-toxic, but it does require you to get the animal in once a week or every 2 weeks, depending on how it's arranged, to get their treatment. But those are the two things that I would recommend as far as getting the dog around. And if she's weighs too much, I would take some of the weight off. You didn't say that she did, but a lot of dogs do weigh more than they ought to. I think it's unlikely at that age that she weighs too much, but you never know. Okay? As far as the bowel movement, the DCO, as you said, has a lot of fiber and would bulk up the stool. It might be that maybe you want to try the opposite strategy of using what's called the low-residue diet. In other words, something that produces the least stool possible, and maybe that would have a better effect on her doing the business in the house. But at that age, there might be a touch of senility too. She might have forgotten where the right place to do the business is. So that's something to consider as well, Joanne.
Joanne, thanks a lot. Well,
Joanne's no longer there.
I guess that's
that's
you're welcome.
Why I got such a
I don't
answer.
Know. You know, and I would just, you know, that was a great question, obviously. But in the interest of getting more than one caller in for the rest of the show, if you can keep your questions just a little bit shorter, otherwise the show will be done. Yvonne and Troy. Yvonne.
Hi. Okay, real quick. I have two cats. One's about 7, and the other one's about 5. And then they're about over 10 pounds apiece. One's probably closer to 12. I want to get a little dog, but I'm afraid, are they too old to start with a new animal? They have a hard time with just a kitten, and he's in the neighborhood.
Good question.
So, Yvonne, do they have their claws?
Yes, they are outside cats.
Okay, okay.
Okay, so here's the problem. There's a pug next door, and he came in as a puppy. And he wanted to play with them, but they stayed on their side of the fence. Now, I don't know if they've done something when I'm not looking, but every time they come to the fence, not to, just to move around, the pug runs up the stairs into the house.
Okay, so the answer, I'm going to give, I have a good answer for you, Yvonne, although the answer is ultimately unanswerable because you can never predict how animals are going to be with other animals, just like you can never predict how one person is going to be with other people. But it seems to me, Yvonne, if you wanted to get a dog as a puppy, so they were 2 months old, and they were a little squirt of a thing, okay, that those 7 and 5 year old cats would have an easy time teaching that puppy what's appropriate and what's not. Just like we have to teach our dogs what is appropriate behavior and what's not. And we have to teach our kids that as well. Mm. And the earlier you do it, the younger they are, the better they learn. Okay. So it gives your two cats the opportunity to teach that dog what's acceptable and what's not. They have their claws and they have their teeth. It's unlikely they would need to use their teeth. Hopefully they wouldn't have to use their teeth. But that's what those things are for, so that they could teach another animal who doesn't know any better at first what's good, what's right, and what's wrong behavior. So I think it's likely if you got a little tiny puppy, 2 months old, that they'd be able to whip that boy or girl into shape. Though,
nice.
It's also the case, okay, Yvonne, that some cats could be very timid. And then if that dog grows, especially if it's a large breed, and that dog is some kind of dumb lug, not getting the message kind of puppy, it's possible for the dog to keep agitating and not to have learned its lesson because the cat was too timid to teach it a clear lesson. Mm. So it's not out of the question that things can not work out beautifully.
Right.
But the younger you are as a puppy when you get it, and they're not that old, 7 and 5, I think you've got good chances for that to work out nicely.
All right. Yvonne, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it very much. We go over to Carol in Pittsfield. Carol.
Hi. I was listening to the woman talking about having a problem with her cat defecating in different places and what she did about it. But I did call to ask you the product you suggested to her, but then I wanted to tell something that happened that worked really well for me last week.
All right.
Can you tell me, please, what that product was? It was something like... Go ahead.
Are you talking about the synthetic pheromone?
Is that the fair something?
Yes, the pheromone is called Felaway, F-E-L-I-W-A-Y.
Okay. Good, and I heard you say how to use it, and I think I'd like to have it on hand.
Well, it comes either as a spray or a plug-in. So as a spray, you spray it onto those areas where the cats spend most of their time, upholstery, etc. The plug-in, you just have to make sure you get enough plug-ins for the area, you know.
So is it true that you're drawing the cat somewhere instead of making them go away?
No, it's doing neither. It is hope that it will unruffle a cat emotionally if they have their feline feathers up in a bun about some inter-cat relations that are stressing them out.
I have one cat.
Wow.
I probably don't need that product then, but I do thank you for that. And I just wanted to tell you
it
that.
It could also be, excuse me for interrupting you,
please.
One cat that could be looking outside its bay window at another cat prowling around its turf could also, you know, make them stressed out and start marking in the house. But the marking is usually a urination, not the bowel movement like Jenny was talking about.
Oh, and I do. Mine's an indoor cat, and he said send other cats visit and sit outside all the time.
Interesting.
So that's interesting, and I'm going to keep that in mind. And I wanted to tell you that my cat, who's about 15, and an adopted cat, and has a lot of anxieties. A great cat, but I have to know that to take care, to let him be comfortable at the anxieties there, and I try to keep his life easy. And he started to defecate everywhere, including on a bed, and it was so unusual for him. So the vet checked him out and with a stool sample and all, and he was fine. So I went online, and I looked at the American Humane Society site, and they had some suggestions. And what I did was get another litter box and put it in the area that he mostly used. And I
yes.
watched him. I watched, and the one that he had was in a traffic area. And it was like, later, what was I thinking for a cat with anxiety? He slowly stopped using the first one and now uses the other one and never goes anywhere else. But he sort of needed me to recognize his anxiety, I guess.
Well, that's excellent of you to have picked that out. Carol, what I do want to mention about the other caller was that the defecation was happening in all different spots. You might recall that I mentioned to her to get an amount of litter boxes that's one greater than the number of cats that she had.
Yes.
And we'll often put that extra litter box in the area where the cat is doing their so-called infractions. But in that case, it was doing it all over. So I couldn't recommend it. But I'm so glad that you were able to get your situation under control.
It was amazing to watch it work.
What you often do is if that area where the new box location is in an inconvenient spot, after they've been using it for a while, you try to tiptoe it over into a better, less in the way spot. You know, every day, another couple inches in the direction that you want that litter box to end up in will sometimes work. You can sometimes get away with it that way as well.
Hmm. Carol, we're going to move on. Okay, go ahead, but then we're going to move on, okay?
I just think the important thing is that we're talking about the sensitivity of the cat.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's
very
really great
sensitive.
To know.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Carol,
sure,
thank you for calling. And let's go quickly to Marissa in Woodstock. Marissa, you have about a minute to pose your question, and the doc has about a minute to answer.
Okay, my question is, I went along the holistic approach with taking care of my dog. She is a 3-year-old Yorkshire Terrier, and I was just wondering if it was healthy for me to not be bringing her to the vet and having her shots besides the ones that she required in the first year of her life.
Okay.
I cook for her, I make her chicken, I do vegetables and rice. And I was just wondering what your thoughts on that were.
So my thoughts, Marissa, I can understand where you're coming from. I use fewer vaccines than any of my colleagues that I know of. But in the order of importance, I think that the rabies vaccine is far and away the most important because animals can get into our houses. Even if our pets are not getting outside, bats can get in. Bats could be carriers of rabies as one example. Okay, and so everyone says, oh, there's no bats in my house. But then come to think of it, person comes back a year later, oh, I got a bat in the house, and the cat went after it, and etc. So the rabies is something that's got catastrophic downsides, Marissa, because if the cat gets it, then we get it. I know that's exceedingly unlikely for it to happen,
yeah. But
that's the least.
If I brought her to the vet now, what would I do to make sure that she was totally healthy? I haven't brought her to the vet in 2 years now.
Marissa, I think it's a great idea to go to the vet, and I think it's a great idea to go to the vet on an annual basis because there are a lot of things that can be happening with a cat that the owners are unaware of.
It's her terrier. She's a 3-year-old Yorkshire Terrier.
I'm sorry. I misspoke. But whether it's a dog or a cat, there are many things that could happen with a dog or a cat that you as an owner may not necessarily pick up on, but a vet can. I've seen dogs come in with foreign bodies in their mouths. I once had a dog with a bottle cap stuck to the roof of its mouth. It had been there a long time. I could tell how it was just growing over, and people didn't know about it. Okay, you look in the mouth, you look at the teeth. That's one of the biggest areas that a lot of people don't realize that their dog's quality of life or their cat's quality of life, too, is suffering because it hasn't been taken care of in a long time. There are other things as well. So I would definitely recommend you take your dog to the vet. And Marissa, if you don't want to give the vaccines, the one that I would abandon first is distemper. Because if there's no other cats that she's going to come into contact with, she doesn't as need it as essentially. Same with the feline leukemia. The rabies is the way to go.
All right, Marissa, we're done, but thanks a lot, and thanks to everybody who called in today. Sorry if you didn't make it through. Thanks to Dr. Ron Scharf, who was splendid as always. Support comes from the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, working to permanently preserve the natural, scenic, and recreational resources of the Lake George region since 1988, lglc.org, NBT Bank, offering business deposit lending, retirement planning, investment, and cash management services, nbtbank.com, and Lexington Vacuum, Albany, New York, Miele Diamond Dealer, also featuring Simplicity, Dyson, Electrolux, Vapora, Vapor Cleaning, Sales Service, Repairs, LEXIVAC.com. That's it. Thanks to Zach Valoy at the controls, Colleen O'Connell, who answered the calls, Patrick Donges, our producer. I am Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Astronomy with Bob Berman. Have a great day. We'll see you then.